Chapters entitled The Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Text 13. Aniruddha Bhavaya Tram Tanra Evikara Manushera Dehi 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 Bhadrachapmakara. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya considered the most uncomic ecstatic symptoms of Aniruddha Bhava are appearing in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is very wonderful. How are they possible in the body of a human being? Purport. Aniruddha Bhava or Aniruddha Mahabhava is explained in Ujjvala Nilamani by Srila Rupa Goswami. Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur quotes Rupa Goswami as follows. The loving propensity of the asraya, that is the devotee, towards the vishaya, the Lord, becomes so ecstatic that even after enjoying the company of the beloved, the devotee feels that his enjoyment is insufficient. At such a time, the lover sees the beloved in different ways. Such a development of ecstasy is called anuraga. When anuraga reaches its highest limit and becomes perceivable in the body, it is called bhava. When the bodily symptoms are not yet very distinct, however, the emotional state is called anuraga, not bhava. When bhava ecstasy is intensified, it is called mahabhava. The symptoms of mahabhava are visible only in the bodies of eternal associates, like the gopis. Eta chinta bhattacharya achena vaisya nityanandari simha dvara milila asya. While the Bhattacharya was thinking in this way at his home, all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, headed by Lord Nityananda Prabhu, approached the Singhadwar gate, that is the entrance door of the temple. Tanha sune loke kahe anyoye vat ekasanyasi asi dehi jagannath. There the devotees heard the people talking about a mendicant who had come to the Jagannath Puri and had seen the deity of Jagannath. Morchita hoila chaitana nahoye sarire sarvabona lana gela apanara gare. The people said that the sannyasi fell unconscious upon seeing the deity of Lord Jagannath. Because his consciousness did not return, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya took him to his home. Suni Sabajani Lae Mahaprabhuda Kaya Hena Kela Oila Tanhe Gopinath Acharya. Hearing this, the devotees could understand that they were speaking of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just then, Sri Gopinath Acharya arrived. Nadiya Nivasa Visare Dara Jamata Mahaprabhura Bhakta Tenho Prabhu Tattva Jata. Gopinath Acharya was a resident of Nadiya, the son-in-law of Visharada, and a devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He knew the true identity of his lordship. Purport. Maheshwara Visharada was a classmate of Nilambara Chakravarti's. He lived in the Dadi Nadiya district in the village called Vidyanagar and had two sons named Madhusudanan Vaschapati and Vasudev Sarvabhauma. His son-in-law was Gopinath Acharya. Mukunda Sahita Purve Ache Parichaya Mukunda Dehiya Tanre Hoila Vishmaya. Gopinath Acharya had previously been acquainted with Mukunda Dutt, and when he saw him at Jagannath Puri, he was very astonished. Mukunda Tahare Dehi Kaila Namaskar Tenho Alingeya Puche Prabhu Samachar. When Mukunda Dutt met Gopinath Acharya, Mukunda Dutt offered obeisances upon seeing him. After embracing Mukunda Dutt, Gopinath Acharya inquired about the news of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mukunda kache Mukunda kahe prabhuar iha hoila agamane ami sabda aisi ache mahaprabhu sane. Mukunda Dutt replied, "The Lord has already arrived here. We have come with him." Nityananda Goshanike Acharya Koila Namaskar Sabe Mele Puche Prabhu Varta Bara Bara. As soon as Gopinath Acharya saw Lord Nityananda, he offered his obeisances unto him. In this way, meeting all the devotees, he asked about news of Lord Chaitanya again and again. Mukundakahi Mahaprabhu Sanayas Kadiye Nila Chale Oila Sange Amar Sabailane. Mukunda Dutt continued, "After accepting the sannyas order, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to Jagannath Puri and has brought all of us with him. Ama Sabe Chare Ange Gela Darasane Ama Sabe Pache Aila Tanha Ave Shane." Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left our company and walked ahead to see Lord Jagannath. We have just arrived and we are now looking for him. Ayon ye lokera muke ye kata sunila sarvabhoma grihe prabhu anumana kaila. From the talk of the people in general, we have guessed that the Lord is now at the house of Sarvabhoma Bhattacharya. Ishvara darsane prabhu prema achetana sarvabhoma lange gela apuna bhavana. Upon seeing Lord Chaitanya, upon seeing Lord Jagannath, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became ecstatic and fell unconscious. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was taking him to his home in this condition. Tomara milane abhyabe amarahoy lamana daive sehishane pailun tomara darasana. Just as I was thinking of meeting you, by chance we have actually met. Chala sabhyay sarvabhomera bhavana prabhu dekhi pache kevira ishvara darsana. First, let us all go to the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Later we shall come to see Lord Jagannath. Etasuni gopinath sarbara lana sarvabhoma garhe gela harasitahana. Hearing this and being very pleased, Gopinath Acharya immediately took all the devotees with him and approached the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhoma stane giya prabhu pe tekila prabhu teki acharyera dukha harsha hoila. After arriving at the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, everyone saw the Lord lying unconscious. Seeing him in this condition, Gopinath Acharya became very unhappy, but at the same time he was happy just to see the Lord. Sarvabhome janana sabe nila abhyantara nityananda goshanire tenho kaila namaskare. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya permitted all the devotees to enter his house, and upon seeing Lord Nityananda Prabhu, the Bhattacharya offered him obeisances. Sabe sanite yate yogya karile milana prabhu deki sabara hoila harasitamana. Sarvabhauma met with all the devotees and offered them a proper welcome. They were all pleased to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sarvabhauma pataila sabde darshana karite chandaneshwara nijaputra dila sava sate. The Bhattacharya then sent them all back to see Lord Jagannath, and he asked his own son Chandeshwara to accompany them as a guide. Jagannatha dehi sava hoila ananda bhaveta avishta hoila prabhu nityananda. Everyone was then very pleased to see the deity of Lord Jagannath. Lord Nityananda in particular was overwhelmed with ecstasy. Sabe mili dari tanre sustira kadile ishvara sevaka mala prasad anidile. When Lord Nityananda Prabhu nearly fainted, all the devotees caught him and steadied him. At that time, the priest of Lord Jagannath brought a garland that had been offered to the deity and offered it to Lord Nityananda. Prasad pane sabe hoila anandita mane pura rapi oila sabe mahaprabhura stane. Everyone was pleased to receive this garland worn by Lord Jagannath. Afterwards, they all returned to the place where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying. Uchakari kare sabbe nama sankirtan tritya praharare hoila prabhura chaitana. All the devotees then began to loudly chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Just before noon, the Lord regained his consciousness. Hankara karira ute hari hari bali ananda sarvabhauma tanre lahapada duri. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got up and very loudly chanted, Hari! 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 Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was very pleased to see the Lord regain consciousness, and he took the dust of the Lord's lotus feet. What is being explained here is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has arrived in Jagannath Puri, and he goes to visit the Jagannath temple. He sees Lord Jagannath, he's by himself, and he faints in ecstasy seeing the Lord, so much so that he loses all his external life symptoms. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, being one of the active priest members in the temple, sees the Lord and becomes somewhat attracted. Who is this sannyasi? So young. And at first the sevaks in the temple wanted to beat Lord Chaitanya when he fell in ecstasy, thinking him a fake. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, stop them. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya arranged to take him to his home, because he could understand, although he was a logician, although he was somewhat of an impersonalist, he could recognize ecstatic symptoms. And he noticed it in the body of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he said, this is quite uncommon. In fact, they were very elevated forms of ecstasy. Nectar Devotion describes that there are different symptoms of ecstasy. Some of them are very basic, but some of them are more developed and more esoteric. It's all explained there. And Lord Chaitanya was exhibiting some of the higher forms of ecstatic symptoms. So he took him to his home, and the devotees, when they got to the temple, they were lost. They couldn't find the Lord. They were wondering where he was. Finally, they got news he was at the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So then they go. So this is what is being explained now. So now the Lord is just coming back to consciousness after the devotees arrive, and they're chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. See, this is also a very important part of this whole lila, is that Lord Chaitanya was unconscious, and he remained in that state of unconsciousness. But when the devotees came and chanted the holy name loudly, and then he got up, he came out of his state of ecstasy. Lord Chaitanya was very much attracted to the chanting of the holy names, and this is the only way that devotees could ever get him out of his internal states of ecstasy, by loudly chanting the holy names of the Lord. It becomes like a roar. And now that's where we left off. Any comments or questions? Okay, we are on which verse?
Text number 19.
Is on the board. And we did 18 yesterday, right? Text 19. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Asuram Asuranam Suda Danam Sarpanam Eva Dornayam Madva Jati Nirsamsanam Na Tvam Yavajant Achyutaha Asuranam Sudadanam Sarpanam Eva Dornayam Matva Jati Nirsamsanam Na tvam vyabhajan adyutaha asuranam sudadanam sarpanam iva dornayam matvajati nirshamsanam natvam vyabhajar achutayaha asuranam sudastanam sarpanam iva dornayam matvajati nirsamsanam natvam vyabhajar achutayaha calculation. Madhva, thinking like that. Jati nirsamsanam, of those who are by nature very envious. Na, not. Tam, the nectar. Vyabhajat, delivered the share. Achyutaha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who never falls down. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Demons are by nature crooked like snakes. Therefore, to distribute a share of the nectar to them was not at all feasible, since this would be as dangerous as flying milk to a snake. Considering this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who never falls down, did not deliver a share of nectar to the demons. Report. It is said, Sarpakura kalakura, Sarpakura tara kalaha. The snake is very crooked and envious, and so also is a person like a demon. Matra Saudi Vasat Sarpa Kala Kena Nirvaryate. One can bring a snake under control with mantras, herbs, and drugs, but an envious and crooked person cannot be brought under control by any means. Considering this logic, the Supreme Personality of Godhead thought it unwise to distribute nectar to the demons. Om Agyanti Midandasya Gyanajana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stathitam Yena Mutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swam Padantikam Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dhyanandasya Dvaita Gadadhar Srivasani Gaur Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Dham Dham, Hare Hare. Asuranam Sudadhanam Sarpanam Ivadurnayam Matvajanti Nirsham Sanam Natvam Vyabhajar Achyutaha. Demons are by nature crooked like snakes. Therefore, to distribute a share of the nectar to them was not at all feasible, since this would be as dangerous as supplying milk to a snake. Considering this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead never falls down, did not deliver a share of the nectar to the demons. In the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it has very nicely described the qualities of the divine and demoniac personalities. And Sri Krishna, in that particular chapter, gives three verses, the first three verses in that chapter, describing the divine qualities. But from there, the entire chapter, consisting of close to 30 verses or more, speaks about the nature of the demons. What is the nature of the demons? Pravrittim cha nirvrittim cha. They don't know what to do. They don't know what not to do. They don't follow any rules or regulations. Neither cleanliness, truthfulness, or proper behavior is found in them. They are envious by nature, harsh. Demons are controlled by anger, lust, greed, enviousness. And it is explained that they're always plotting to make arrangements for sense gratification. So we read about demons sometimes, and when we read Krishna book, or we read Srimad Bhagavatam, or even Ramayana, we hear about very powerful, grotesque forms of demons that were dispatched with great difficulty by the Lord. Who, these demons had much power, they had much abilities, and they were quite intelligent by material standards. And many of them even knew the Vedas, and was able to use Vedic knowledge in order to somehow or other acquire their demoniac influence. Ravana was such personalities, Rani Kashipu and others. But it is explained that years ago in the Satya Yuga, demons were on different planets. There was a planet of people who were godly, and there was a planet of people who were ungodly. Even today, there are many planets in the universes that are quite demoniac, that are inhabited by practically the entire population as demons. And as time went on, and the demons and the asuras and asuras became more and more connected. So then it became in different continents. Same planet, different continents. And as time went on, it became pretty much same continent. But the only separation was there were families of demons and families of devotees. Now in Kali Yuga, demons or devotees are so connected that they're even born in the same families. Sometimes we see a devotee is, a child is very saintly, a are very inclined to Krishna consciousness and devotional service, and the parents are very, very sinful and demoniac, and sometimes even work against spiritual movements. So nowadays the demons are somewhat indistinguishable from everyone else. Prabhupada says they walk around with suit and tie, they look like everybody else. But their qualities are demoniac in nature. By studying the 16th chapter, we understand what is demoniac quality. A demon is always thinking, so much wealth I have today, and so much more will be mine in the future. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemy will also be killed. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. No one is as great as me. I shall give in charity. I shall perform some sacrifice, and therefore I shall rejoice. Krishna explained, that's from the, I believe, the 12th verse from the 16th chapter, one of the verses. So it's very clear what are the activities of demonic. And so we look around today and we see the world as it is. Pretty much the world is influenced by demoniac qualities and controlled by demoniac persons. In fact, if we study very scrutinizingly, we'll find that educational institutions, communication networks, entertainment industries, and political organizations are controlled and operated by demoniac principles and by demoniac people, who may have some connection with religion, but only in name only, in order to give some air of religious connection, but no real following, no real worship. So you see the advertisement, the entertainment, the activities of the leaders are all based on demoniac qualities. Now how can anyone become peaceful in a society like that? So what is the nature of the demons? Here it explains they're very crooked and envious. And the quality of envy is what brings the living entity to the material world. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in the very beginning of the 9th chapter, he says to Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I will impart to you this most secret of all secrets. In other words, the quality for understanding spiritual life is one has to become free from envy. That is a very important part, and it's also a very difficult part. What is the nature of enviousness? What is the definition of enviousness? And one becomes desirous of enjoyment at the expense of another. They don't care. Prabhupada said, if you feel happy, the Bhagavatam says, if you feel happy when somebody else is suffering, and if you feel suffering when someone else is happy, then that is a quality of enviousness. If someone else is receiving something wonderful or something good, if you don't feel happy for that person, that means that is an indication of the quality of enviousness. And if someone is suffering, if you feel happy or good because of their suffering, sometimes people feel like that. Oh, gee, my life's not so bad. He's also suffering. Therefore, you feel kind of relieved. This is also the quality of envy. The original envy comes from envying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is the nature of that envy? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Vyagachapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram Suhidam Sarva Bhutanam Shantam Mamyantam Rijjati. That Bhokta, he is Bhokta. Bhokta means that he is the supreme enjoyer. And everything is meant for the enjoyment of the Lord, including us. We are meant for Krishna's enjoyment. So due to our fall to the material world, we try to enjoy this world separate from Krishna. And we make plans that are in opposition with Krishna's plan. And in that false attempt to become happy, we're struggling with the material energy. This is due to trying to lord it over the material energy. And the basis of that quality is enviousness. I want to enjoy like Krishna. Krishna has a nice girlfriend, therefore I should have one, right? Right? Everybody here, right? Radharani. So we think Krishna is the supreme. We read about Krishna's pastimes. Why can't I enjoy like that? And Krishna is getting all the nicest offerings. Why can't I enjoy all these nice, delectable and sumptuous foodstuffs? Krishna is getting all the praise. I want to be praised too. Krishna is getting all the attention. I want attention too. Right? These are all qualities of being envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So due to that, the living entity develops this what we call a separate mentality and tries to somehow or other enjoy separate from Krishna. When that nature becomes full-blown, it takes the form of becoming demoniac. Now, one is not subtle about their desires to enjoy separate. One wants to be like God. Therefore, Mayavadi philosophy, as explained by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is basically a demoniac philosophy. Although it comes in the name of spiritualism, the Mayavadis say that you are God and I am God, we just forgot we're God, and everything else is illusion. When we become realized of our real nature, then we actually come back to playing the role of God again. It's quite ridiculous because God doesn't get toothaches. God doesn't have to go to doctors and get, you know, pills for their headaches or stomach aches or whatever. But it's so foolish. But yet people believe this Mayavadi philosophy. And that, you know, every living entity is ultimately God. And this is, of course, the real basis of all envy. Not only do you compete with God, but you want to be God. And therefore, it says Mayavadis are, you know, full-blown envious personalities. Although they practice austerities, penances, study the Vedas, and even maybe look like nice fellows, you can talk to them. They'll shake hands with you, they'll smile at you, they'll greet you, they'll be very friendly. But when it comes to actually understanding what is the reality, and they say, yes, we're all God. We've just forgotten our God-like position, and we just have to. So what does the word God mean? Or what does the word Krishna mean? It means the supreme enjoyer. So everyone wants to be the supreme enjoyer. So here, the demons and the demigods are fighting over the pot of nectar. So what is that? The demons want the nectar for themselves in order to enjoy unlimitedly by having long life and extraordinary powers. And the demigods want the nectar so they can serve the Lord nicely. Of course, they have some tinge. Some demigods, they want to also be powerful, but they want to be powerful so they can serve Krishna nicely. The difference between the demigod and the pure devotee is that the demigods are also devotees, but they want things in order to serve Krishna. I need a nice position, I need some power, I need some facility, and then I can serve Krishna very nicely. That's a demigod. And that's okay. Krishna says, fine, as long as it's in service for me. But it's not pure. Pure devotion means that I want to serve the Lord the way the Lord wants me to serve, in whatever condition that the Lord wants me to serve in. That's ultimately pure devotee. And even if the Lord neglects me, that is also considered by the devotee to be the mercy of the Lord. Because Krishna will, neglect, and Krishna will give attention. He does both to his special devotees. For the regular devotees, he does, tries to give all his mercy. For the special ones, he hides. Sometimes. Sometimes we say, where did Krishna go? Well, Krishna does that just to increase our attachment for Krishna. If we have no attachment for Krishna, Krishna won't hide from us. Because when he hides from one who has no attachment from Krishna, from him, what the person just goes away and finds some other form of enjoyment in order to make up the difference for Krishna's lack of presence. But for the more elevated souls, look what he did to the residents of Vrindavan. He left them for so many years. And what did it do? It simply increased their love. And increased their attachment for Krishna. So Krishna, he does that only to increase the loving relationships. When someone loves someone, when that person's not around, they don't look for something else to substitute that love. They live in the hope that sooner or later that person will return. That's real love. But nowadays we find people in the material world, that's why it's not so much love, it's lust. Lust means that when something goes wrong in my loving relationship, I look for that relationship somewhere else. I try to find that happiness somewhere else. I try to find that satisfaction somewhere else. So therefore, love, as Prabhupada said, love in the material world, there's no such thing as love in the material world. It's only lust. Lust means I want to satisfy my senses. Love means I want to satisfy the senses of the person that I have attraction for. The gopis were always trying to serve Krishna. It appeared that they were young, lusty girls, but actually they only wanted to use their lusty desires to satisfy Krishna. That's all. They had no personal motivations for themselves. They were simply interested in satisfying the Lord. So that is the nature of devotion. Here we're speaking about enviousness. And envious is the basic, it's called matsarya. And it has to be given up. Srila Prabhupada explains that the different negative qualities that attack the living entity, such as lust, anger, greed, illusion, and enviousness, primarily lust can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. If you have lusty desires, you work steadily for Krishna. Keep your mind and senses worked nicely, engaged in Krishna's service. That lusty desire will become purified, and then it will turn into love of God eventually. If we're greedy for material things, we should use that greed in order to try to increase our service, become greedy for Krishna. Greedy for service, and greedy to use things in Krishna's service. If one is subjected to anger, then one can use anger in the service of the Lord by speaking strongly against those who are against the Lord, of protecting the devotees, protecting the religious principles, like that. One can use anger. But enviousness, matsarya, one has to give that up. That cannot be dovetailed. Prabhupada said that has to be given up. Because that is the principle that keeps one in the material world. As we were explaining earlier, Krishna says to Arjuna, because you were never envious of me, then I can tell you the truth of higher principles of spiritual life. The 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called the most confidential knowledge. There's knowledge, there's more confidential, and there's most confidential. Krishna begins the 9th chapter, which is entitled the most confidential knowledge, by that verse. That because you are never envious of me, because you want to serve me and please me, and therefore I give you this knowledge. So that is the basic principle of a devotee. A devotee wants to serve the Lord. A devotee wants to please the Lord. So here, Krishna is concerned because he sees that the demons are getting the pot of nectar. So he's going to somehow or other trick them into... So he incarnates as Mohini Murti. Now, Prabhupada explains that demons are very much attracted to the beautiful form of the opposite sex. And she came in such a way as immediately their minds became attracted, as we were reading. And whatever she said, whatever she did, whatever, even the slightest little whim, they were willing to satisfy. Prabhupada explains, this is the nature of the demons. They're very much attracted to the forms of the opposite sex. And of course, money. What was Hiranyakashipu's name? Hiranyakashipu's name meant soft bed and gold. That's what the word Hiranyakashipu means. Gold and soft bed. That's if you actually translate the name on Hiranyakashipu. Soft bed indicates, and gold indicates. So these two things, money and the opposite sex, are the target of those in demoniac consciousness. They just look for those two things, considered and by material standards to be the highest form of enjoyment. So in order to attract the demon's mind, the Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnated in that form. And they forgot, practically forgot about the nectar. She said, give me the pot of nectar. And they said, here, take it. So they gave it to her. And then they were thinking, okay, now she's going to distribute it to us. But she fooled them. Did we get to that part yet? No, we didn't get to that part yet. Anyway, and we'll get to the point here where she tricks them and gives the nectar to the... Oh, okay, this section is just as she's beginning to incarnate. Okay. It gets very, very interesting here. So, a devotee has no attraction for these things, the opposite sex and money, because everything is meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. Whatever facility Krishna gives to the devotee, he can use, but he's not attracted to these things. These things are sources of bondage in the material world. This material world is called Maitunya Agra. It means the shackles of sex life. Out of all the shackles in this material world, there's the attachment to position, attachment to wealth, attachment to so many attachments. But the ultimate attachment is attraction to the opposite sex. That is the basic principle of this material world. And the whole material world is based on that particular principle. It's called Maitunya Agra. Maitunya means sex and Agra means shackles. And that one remains attached to this material world due to the desire to enjoy the facility of the opposite sex. What is that enjoyment? That same enjoyment is our natural attraction to Krishna, dovetail to the objects of this world. Because the living entity has a natural loving propensity for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When that same propensity becomes diverted to the objects of this world, and that propensity becomes the source of one's bondage in this material world. So, it is explained that the greatest of all attractions is sex life. What is that verse? Pumsam striya mituni bhava metat mitayor mitya gridayan granti ahur ato griha shetra sutapta vitayar janasa moham yamahama meti. Rishabhadeva explains in 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that the attraction between male and female is the basic principles of material life. And he says, based on this misconception, the hearts of the male and female become attached to each other. And then comes home, family, wealth, children, possessions, and attachment to all these things, including one's body. From there, life's illusion increases and one starts to think in terms of I and mine. The I am mine principle comes simply from the beginning attraction to the opposite sex, and then it becomes expanded out farther and farther until one starts to think everything is meant for my enjoyment and everything is, and I am the center of existence. This is the I am mind principle. But ultimately, we understand from philosophy and from the scriptures that everything belongs to Krishna. And everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. And I am by nature also part and parcel of Krishna. I'm meant to satisfy the senses of Krishna. So this attraction to the opposite sex, as it becomes more and more developed, it expands itself into material life. And then one becomes so entrenched in material life, one cannot even see or even consider one's relationship with the Lord. So these things have to be clearly understood and in order not to become implicated in the meshes of the material energy. That same attraction that we have for the opposite sex can be dovetailed for our attraction for Krishna. Krishna can satisfy the hearts and minds of all living entities completely. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the source of all beauty, all knowledge, strength, riches, fame, strength, wealth, and renunciation. All these things that we're finding within the objects and the living entities in this world are found in Krishna completely. He is the reservoir of all attractiveness. That's why he's called Krishna. So that same attraction that we find for the things of this world, when we use that attraction towards Krishna, it actually frees us from the attachments of this world and actually brings us to the platform of real happiness. Because happiness based on sense gratification, the combination of the senses with the sense objects, epitomized by the relationship between male and female, is simply a source of misery. It's explained in Bhagavad Gita that sense gratification is the foundation for misery. Yehi samsparsa jaboga dukkha yoniya evate avanta vanta kunti anateshu ramate bhuta. That ultimately the senses cannot be sources of pleasure. Why? Because any form of sense objects that is enjoyed in this material world, one has to suffer in the proportion of that. In other words, whatever enjoyment the living entity gets in the material world, there's a proportional amount of suffering that comes with that enjoyment. And it is explained that in sex life, because that is considered the height of all enjoyment in the material world, of course, by material standards, that form of activity brings about the greatest suffering. The greatest, you see? What is the result of that? So many problems. Unwanted children, broken homes, stress, distress, so many problems, diseases, early deaths, because of that. So, of course, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that sex life is not wrong if it's based on religious principles. Kamosmi bharatasabha. But ultimately, one cannot have an attachment for that and have an attachment for Krishna. The only use for sex life is in grihastha life and for the propagation of children, for the bringing up of children. Otherwise, it is a source of pain and misery. That's why there's so many rules and restrictions in order to engage in what we call authorized sense gratification. There's so many. Why is there so many rules and regulations according to Vedic scriptures in order to engage in authorized sense gratification? Because it's meant to discourage us. Okay, you want sense gratification, you can have it, but you have to do all these other things. There's so many rules and regulations just to become discouraged. One time, how was it? Back in the old days, one devotee. Practically, he was the first devotee in this movement. His name was Hayagriva. He He was like, the devotees were in the movement 6 months. It was brand new movement. Prabhupada was there. So Prabhupada was explaining some of the basic principles. Then in married life, you're allowed to have sex like once a month until the woman becomes pregnant, and then you stop. So Hayagriva said, once a month? What's the use? Why even have it at all? Prabhupada said, very good boy. Now you have understood. There's so many restrictions that in order to discourage the living entities, that if you want this, there's, and of course in that once a month there are so many rules and regulations also to follow. And by, if when the living entity breaks these rules and regulations, they lose Krishna's mercy. But there's so many restrictions, so many rules and regulations. Ultimately, the living entity is not meant to enjoy sense gratification. It's not meant to enjoy sense gratification. Living entity is meant to ultimately use their mind and senses to please the senses of the Lord. Because Krishna is called Drishikesh. He's the master of all senses. And our senses are connected with Krishna's senses. So when Krishna's senses are pleased, our senses also become satisfied and pleased. So the key is satisfying Krishna means self-satisfaction. Because the senses, the self is not different than the Supreme Self in the sense that the root of the tree is watered, the branches, the twigs, everything else becomes nourished by simply by putting the proper amount of water and care upon the root. So in the same way, the living entity becomes attracted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotional service. And how, what does it take to satisfy Krishna? Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Patram Pushram Palam Toyo, Yo Mi Bhakti Panachyati. You just offer me a leaf, flower, fruit, and water. And he says, what's love? He doesn't need leaves, he doesn't need flowers, he has plenty of fruits on the trees. God, there's billions of leaves, so much water. Why is he asking for these simple, available things? Because he's explaining that it's not these things that make me happy. You can offer him billions of dollars. It doesn't mean anything. But if you offer with love, then he's attracted. When Duryodhana invited Krishna to his house, he wanted to entertain Krishna and get Krishna on his side, so he created this grand festival in the honor of Krishna, and he had all the best cooks in his kingdom come. They prepared this sumptuous feast. He had all these entertainers, big, huge elaborate arrangement to honor Krishna. Krishna didn't even go. He didn't even go. He went to Vidura's house instead. When he got to Vidura's house, there was nothing in the house to eat. So Vidura's wife, she was so surprised to see Krishna that she ran and she was looking for something to offer to him. And she found some bananas. So in her excitement to give the bananas to Krishna, she peeled the bananas and she threw away the bananas and gave him the peel. And Krishna was so happy that he was eating the peel and he was experienced the devotion of Vidura's wife. He was so happy. But Duryodhana made this big elaborate, didn't even go. So Krishna is attracted by love. By love. But we can't love Krishna unless we serve Krishna. Service is the expression of our love. We just can't just say, I love you and don't do nothing. We have to serve the Lord. And that is the way to express our love. And accordingly, we should serve the Lord in such a way that it becomes pleasing to the Lord. And by doing that, then Krishna gradually reveals his transcendental form. He reveals his transcendental pastimes. He reveals his transcendental name to the devotee. These things, his name, his fame, his name, his form, his pastimes are all sources of great happiness for the devotee. But through the process of serving Krishna and pleasing, he reveals the qualities of these things. And as he reveals them, we actually become satisfied simply by chanting the holy names of the Lord, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, simply by hearing the wonderful pastimes of the Lord, simply by dancing, taking Krishna prasadam. All our mind, all our senses beyond what can possibly compare to anything in this material world. Even the greatest form of happiness in this material world is considered to be pain in proportion to even a drop of the happiness found in devotional service. That is Krishna. That is Krishna. And he's always trying to attract our mind towards his transcendental loving service. So here it's explained very importantly that the quality of envy has to be given up, because that is the quality that separates us from the Supreme Lord. And that enviousness means, I want to enjoy, not you. It means I want to be the enjoyer at the expense of not trying to serve Krishna. So we should try to make Krishna happy. If we try to become happy without making Krishna happy, we will not become happy. If we try to become happy by making Krishna happy, we will become happy. That's how it works. That's the process. Okay, so we'll stop there. Any comments, questions on anything? Yes, Mother Tina? You're happy. You're smiling.
I'm going to take it back. Your lecture is so nice for people who are poor, or maybe they're so ugly they can't get someone beautiful. But where is the example for people who have money? And as one of these devotees got a lot of money, or a beautiful woman came up and started to talk to them, wouldn't we see they would run for that money and run for the rich?
Yeah, probably.
So, I mean, where's the real practicality in your philosophy?
Practicality is the
name.
Yeah. How many times do you have to stick your hand in the fire before you get burnt? Do you realize the fire burns? We've all tried it so many times. We keep doing it, and then every time we do it, it goes wrong. And we think, I haven't done it the right way, so I just need to do it again. Mitche Maya Beste Kachuha Bububai. Jeev Krishna Das. Hey, Vishnu Kalinad. You're being kicked constantly by the material energy, life after life. And then what do? I just need a different kind of kick. We go back to the same thing. It's just like the she ass and the he ass. Have you ever seen that? The she ass and the he ass? And Radhanath Swami was telling me his story one time. He was telling me this was a funny story. He was in New Vrindavan. He said, I was watching this. He said, it was right out of the Bhagavatam. There was a he-ass, a donkey. He was across the street from where New Vrindavan, he was watching it. So he's sitting there, you know. The donkey just, you know, donkey, it's a donkey. So the female donkey, she comes up to him, and she just, you know, starts brushing against him, and just like, you know, he's getting to get him all charged up. So he's getting all charged up. He comes after the female, and she kicks him in the face. Poof! That's the loving relationship between the he-ass and the she-ass. Like that. She gets him all excited, and when he comes for some results, he gets kicked in the face. So he goes, boom, gets kicked in the face. So he stops. So then after some time he's sitting there, and then she comes up again. Does the same thing again. He comes running up, boom, gets kicked in the face again. So Prabhupada used to use this example. This is what happens in our material life. We're attracted by Maya. Ah, so nice. We come, boom, kicked in the face. And we go on, and then after a few minutes we forgot about being kicked, and we go back again. This is our attraction to the material world. Keep doing it. So the idea is, how many times you have to get kicked?
People are so happy. They live for so many years together with their spouse.
National.
They have a wonderful life. They're so happy.
This is
if
the.
They have a good family. What about those? They have a good family and a good family.
Bhagavatam says there's no one in the material world that's happy. It's all an illusion. People put on this facade of being happy. It's like, are we having fun yet? You seen that bumper sticker? Yeah. Everybody's asking themselves, if we do this, will we be happy? Let's do it. And when they're doing it, are we enjoying? Nobody's happy because they're always suffering. They're suffering birth, death, disease, and old age. They're suffering the mind and body. They're suffering the threefold miseries of the material energy. So they go on presenting themselves in a way that appears to be, okay, say, let me give a little concession. Say there is some little bit of happiness in this world. What is it? What is that little bit of happiness? It's like a drop in a desert. A man is suffering from thirst. He sees a little puddle of water in the desert. And he's thinking, now I will quench my thirst. So he goes, he gets one little drop. And what does that drop do? It simply increases his thirst. That's material life. You're suffering, you want pleasure, you see something, you go for it, you get a little bit of a relief from the suffering of the anxiety of your mind and body for a few seconds, and you just, and after a few minutes, again it comes back. And that's material life. It's material life. So people appear to be, because if you don't appear to be happy, then you have to kind of like act like you're happy. Oh yes, I'm happy. Are you happy? Yes, I'm happy. And statistics are 70% of people are going to psychiatrists, but everybody's happy. People are taking all kinds of drugs just to get up in the morning. Just to go to bed at night. Are we happy? Oh, sure. We're very happy. Just see, I'm smiling. You're smiling too. This is all foolishness. Real happiness is not this. Even if we give some concession to the fact there is a thing called material happiness, the fact is it's only a little tiny drop. Can't be satisfied with a drop. We want, the soul is by nature ananda. The soul is by nature wants unlimited pleasure. And we're looking for unlimited pleasure in a place where there is no pleasure or a drop of that pleasure. And everyone is just running after that drop, trying to chase that one little drop. And Maya's just saying, yeah, you just keep going. You got it down. He didn't get it right, but you're smarter. You got it. You know what to do. You can do it. Go ahead. It's Maya. And so this is material life. And after it's all over, we look back and we just... It's like our whole life, we're just looking for material happiness or happiness. So finally, when we get so old, we can't chase it anymore. We look back when we were young and say, do you remember how happy we were? Take out the picture albums. Look, there's Johnny. He went to the mountains. You remember that time we had so much fun on the picnic? And then it rained. Material life is... Your whole life you're looking for happiness, and finally when you get so old you can't look for it anymore, you look back and you just say, you remember when we were young, how happy we were? Material life is just it's a melodrama. It's a soap opera. It ends in tragedy. Why is it like that? Because Krishna has created this material world in such a way as to frustrate our attempts to be happy. He does that simply so we will turn towards Him. That is the reason why there's suffering in the material world. It's not that it's built in. It's part of the plan. Krishna does that in order to teach you. Because if you could become happy here, then you wouldn't have anything to do with Krishna. And you wouldn't want Krishna. But Krishna is making it so that ultimately you have to turn to Him. That's His special mercy. That's His love. Yes? The life of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he had a district. Bhakti Vinod Thakur was a district magistrate. He had a family. He had 10 children in the family. He had 10 children. Of course, one was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. He had 10 children. He used to say, when I go home to my family, my house is like Vaikuntha. His wife was Krishna conscious. All his children were Krishna conscious. So Prabhupada said, if you want to be a grihastha, you should follow in the footsteps of Bhakti Vinod Thakur and become an ideal grihastha. And that means you have to work in order to come up to that standard. Grihastha life is also there. But ultimately, the whole idea is ultimately, it's not the goal of life. The goal of life is not to become nicely situated in grihastha life in this world. The whole Vedic system is meant to, you go through grihastha life, you have those desires, you fulfill those desires in a way that is based on scripture. We live a Krishna conscious way, life, according to the rules and regulations of grihastha life. You produce children, and ultimately, in your later years, you give that up, you take sannyas, and you finish your life and by going back home, back to Godhead, in a renounced state. Grihastha life is not meant for the entire life. It's meant after 50 years, you leave the home, situate the wife nicely. She can also take renounced order of life. You go to Vrindavan, and there's temples that are filled with ladies who are elderly, who live in a very renounced way. They've given up their husbands, or their husbands have died and left, and they live, and they finished out their life, and they live in the temples, and they become fixed on Krishna. So the whole idea in life is to become fixed on Krishna. So grihastha life is not meant to live to the end of life. It's only meant for a certain period within one's life. But if you want to become a grihastha, then you should follow in the footsteps of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. That is the best. And that means Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he was using his time to become fully Krishna conscious. He managed a family. If you can do that. It's very difficult in this age to do that. But if you can do that, then that's fine. That's part of the, Vanashram Dharma system that is there. But we have to be ideal. Therefore, there must be training. The man and woman must live strictly according to the rules and regulations of Shastras for proper grihastha relationships. That has to be there. If that's not followed 100%, then if there's some disharmony in the relationship, then one's spiritual life will be destroyed. Therefore, there must be harmony in grihastha life, because if there's disharmony, then it becomes difficult to become Krishna conscious in that. So there has to be harmony there. And that's the responsibility of the man, to be fully Krishna conscious, and the wife to be 100% dedicated to serving the husband according to the husband's guidance and directions in spiritual life. Then, only then, if the wife and husband each have their own agenda, relationships don't work. Bhagavati Devi was the wife of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. She was a very chaste and faithful wife. Very chaste. She was ideal mother. So where do we find that? It takes great training, it takes culture, it takes upbringing. So that has to be there. Otherwise, if that's not there, and then if there's a little bit of problems in the relationship, then it disturbs one's bhajan. So therefore, This is something that has to be very, very carefully understood, and that we understand what does it mean to be a grihastha. Not that we just go into look at our percentage of our relationships in ISKCON. The divorce rate in ISKCON is higher than the divorce rate in the material world. Higher, much higher. It's almost 85 to 90% of our marriages in ISKCON have fell apart. Very high. Why? No training. Devotees are not trained. They're not trained to become Krishna conscious and responsible grihasthas at the same time. Both have to be there. So that has to be studied, practiced, and one has to get example and help from other grihasthas. Well, that's important. We have to develop that foundation within our society where the grihastha ashram can get support for whatever it needs in order to develop nicely. Grihastha life, grihastha and grihamedi are two different things. Grihamedi means, miserly. It means for my enjoyment. Grihastha means for Krishna's enjoyment. Krishna remains the center. So it's a very, very important consideration that in grihastha life, if we want to follow ideally, we should follow ideally. And Srila Prabhupada said, Bhakti Vinod Thakur is the ideal grihastha for our movement. Study his life, read his books, get the understanding, understand how he was able to do such things. Be an exemplary grihastha like Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And then your grihastha life will be successful. That means both persons have to be interested in one thing, serving Krishna. The man is serving Krishna, the woman is serving Krishna. The woman is serving her husband and serving Krishna, the man is serving his wife and serving Krishna. Krishna has to be the center of the relationship. If Krishna is not the center of the relationship, then the relationship will not work according to religious principles. Gradually, it'll get off on the principle of sense gratification. So that's there, of course. Grihastha life is part of life. Prabhupada said most of our society will be grihastha. And that's there. But one has to understand how to become a good grihastha, because it's a big responsibility. It's a big responsibility. You're responsible for yourself, and you're responsible for someone else. And eventually, if there's children, you're responsible for them. Therefore, as explained in the teachings of Yamaraj, what is that verse? Janena sasyat, patit nasasyat, what is the guru nasasyat? One should not become guru, one should not become father, one should not become mother, one should not become teacher, unless they can deliver their disciples, their progeny, their charges from the repetition of birth and death. So it's a great responsibility. No ashram is meant for sense gratification. Ashram means place of spiritual cultivation. Whatever ashram you're in, it means a place for developing your spiritual life. In grihastha ashram, there is some concession to allow for some types of sense gratification, but under great restrictions and regulations only, in order to facilitate the relationship, but not for sense gratification. Nothing is meant for sense gratification. Everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. So there is some allowance in grihastha life, but that allowance is only there after so many years. One has to give that up too and ultimately come to the stage of renunciation. So we have to see what it means to enter into an ashram. Whatever it is, we have to take it very, very seriously, because spiritual life is serious. It's a very serious thing, because if we don't become Krishna conscious in this life, we have to come back again in the next life and pick up from where we left off. And that means, again, going through the whole cycle of birth, growing up, going through everything, learning how to walk again, learning how to talk again, going to kindergarten, so many things. In other words, Lord Chaitanya is making it easy. He's giving us the process in this age. You chant the holy names of the Lord, focus your mind on spiritual life. By His mercy, you can do it. Okay, so I don't want to belabor that point because it's a... Did I answer the question?
Oh, yes.
I think I even answered a few thousand other questions. Okay. Thank you very much for your kind attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.